You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up, Australia slides down the global university rankings. The Reserve Bank of New Zealand issues a huge interest rate cut, and the market's still digesting the latest China stimulus. All the details next. It is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Wednesday, the 9th of October 2024. The Australian share market rose today, but only just. I'll have the details with Niv Dagan from Peak Asset Management. But first, the average ranking of Australia's universities has declined by 5 places in the Times Higher Education University World Rankings. And the highest rated Australian university is the University of Melbourne at number 39 on that global list. So what does it mean for the sector and for the Australian economy? I spoke with Anel Calderon from the QS Global Rankings Advisory Board.
Well, there are 18 measures across 5 pillars which reflect the universities, basically the teaching environment, the research environment, the quality of research that they produce, the international outlook in terms of international students, staff, and publications, and also their connection with industry. And the various measures capture data on students, staff, university finances, and research activity. But THG also has a component which is about a reputation survey, which weighs one third of the world ranking. So it's a collection of different measures. The ranking does not really reflect on the teaching quality of the institution, but it has dimensions of activity on the teaching environment that the institution has. For example, the student staff ratio or income per staff member or institution. So it gives a context about the overall standing of Australian universities in the global stage.
Okay. So run us through Australian standings on the global stage, because they've generally fallen. Why and how are their reputations being hit?
Well, it's interesting because the results that we're seeing today with Times Higher Education is the first time in multiple years that we really see a systematic decline for most Australian universities. In the past, we have seen a weakening in the Australian performance, but now it is somewhat like it's a material decline. And there are two ways to explain why this happened. One is the THG data is based on 22 performance. And we almost have forgotten how 22 was for Australian universities. But an important context is that in 22, Australian universities experienced decline in financial standing. So we have in 22, 27 universities which reported an operating deficit. So basically, things were not looking good. Also, we have fewer international students because Australian borders were closed in 2020 and 21, and we also have fewer staff. So the combination of those factors, when you look into the context of the performance of institution in terms of measuring the performance per capita basis, it impacted us. But also, it impacted on the reputation survey. As I said before, one per the overall score is based on the reputation survey. And there are two dimensions to that. One is the component on teaching, and the other one is on the research perception. So it's basically, academics basically saying how they deem the quality of Australia's education. What is interesting to see with this decline that we are now seeing is that in previous years, Australian universities were doing really well, in part because the data that THG was using based on the UNESCO data was like 10 or 20 or 12 years old, which basically suggested that Australian universities were doing a lot better than what they were in the past. And the reality is that basically in some ways we were overrepresented in the overall global stage because we were sort of having greater number of staff. So now that reflects, but probably will take 2 or 3 years for the results on the reputation surveys to become more stable, and we'll be able to assess whether the impact on the reputation measures is really worrying. But if we look across other rankings, it already suggests that the perception of Australian universities is declining in the global stage.
Okay, so what does this report then mean for the sector and for the Australian economy?
I think what it means is that potentially we'll be having fewer international students in the long term, because people are not viewing Australian education the same way they did in the past. And this, together with the debate that we have had in recent weeks and months about, you know, how many number international students have, that's one dimension. The other dimension is about potentially we might have, will be become less attractive for people to do research with us, to invest in terms of Australia for research and development and other things. So the impact could resonate across multiple sectors of the Australian economy. And we also have to keep in mind that education services have been Australia's number one export for multiple years. So it is likely to resonate across a number of different sectors, housing, restaurants, and across, because, you know, international students not only pay fees to us, they also had to consume, they had to live somewhere. And in the process, we all benefit and also contribute to tourism because the parents or families come to visit us.
I ran my eye down the list of the top 200 universities around the world. Number one was Oxford. But going through the list, I noticed there was a section that listed the percentage of international students at universities around the world. Would it be fair to say that Australia has one of the highest?
Yes, Australia will be, together with the United States and the United Kingdom, having the highest number of international students. So the what we're seeing now potentially puts in perspective that, you know, we need to be more conscious about and more careful about what kind of decisions we want to make in terms of the long-term future for Australian universities and for the broader society.
So with that in mind, how can Australia improve its university rankings?
One of the things that Australian universities can do, and together with governments, is potentially invest more, be more wise in terms of where the decisions are made, where we invest in terms of which disciplines and areas, but also for government and industry and other sectors to support universities in their endeavors, because we are all connected. You know, what impacts in one sector of the economy resonates elsewhere. Like, you know, by having international students here, it benefits other economic sectors in Australia. The other thing that universities can do together with government is provide better services for the students, connect with their communities in which universities serve and operate, and be, you know, part of that community because we all benefit from that. And also for industry and universities to work more closely because we all benefit from that closer collaboration.
And finally, Oxford University is on top of the global rankings. So of those doing well, why are they on the top of the list?
They do well because they have had a long history in education. You know, Australia's higher education has only been, you know, a few decades or, you know, 100 years in terms of being material as a university. But also those universities have, you know, large funds, resources, philanthropy, and the ability to draw from investments that they have been generating for years. So Australia does not have the amount of resources like some of those universities. But I think we have to be proud that we have had our university system that, you know, that the system that was developed in the 1980s that has become a powerhouse. And we have, not many countries have basically the number of universities that are represented in the global rankings, particularly at the top. So we should really be proud that we have had universities done great job in the past 20 or 30 years. That basically a few years ago we only had 19 research universities. Now we have over 30 universities that are doing research, and many of them are being research intensive. So I think it will take some time, but probably we're having, you know, a few years in which things are going to be difficult.
That is Anel Calderon there from the QS Global Rankings Advisory Board. We go now to New Zealand, where its central bank has cut official interest rates by a huge 50 basis points to 4.75%, joining many parts of the world where rates are being cut. So will Australia follow suit? For more, Raina Bosch spoke with Jared Kerr, the chief economist of the Kiwi Bank in Auckland.
First of all, it's welcome. We've all been calling for further rate cuts and for them to pick up the pace. And today they have. They delivered a 50, which is great. They're doing it because the New Zealand economy has been in recession for 2 years, and it's been a long 2 years. And they've won the battle against inflation. So they've put their stake in the ground in August and said, hey, we've won this war. It's now time to return interest rates to more neutral settings.
So what does this say about how the New Zealand economy is looking at the moment?
It's soft. It really is. We're hearing of job losses coming through, with quite a few coming through over the next 6 months or so. That's a worry. There's now downside risks to the outlook for New Zealand growth and inflation. In fact, they may undershoot inflation. So it just tells you that the New Zealand economy is very, very weak right now, and it is time to do something about it.
The message that we're hearing from the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, very similar to what we're hearing here in Australia, that rate cuts in the future will depend on the data. What are you expecting to happen, though?
We expect a few more. We think the Reserve Bank needs to cut all the way down to 2.5. Neutral is considered to be around 2.5 to 3. So all those cuts, as many as they are, is only removing the restrictiveness of policy and taking it back to a setting that is no longer hurting or stimulating the economy. And there's a good 250 basis points to be delivered. So Reserve Bank's still got their work cut out for them, but they're on that path.
Globally, we've seen a similar downward trend taking place, the US cutting rates quite substantially as well. But Australia is lagging behind. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we've seen quite a few central banks move now, from the Bank of England, ECB, Bank of Canada, RBNZ again today. RBA, they're a little more cautious. They didn't hike as hard, and I think they've won the war on inflation, but they've yet to claim victory. And I think it's just a matter of time. I think most Australian economists, onto it and thinking that they're going to cut, if not by the end of this year, very early next year. So it'll take a little bit longer for the RBA to get on board. But most central banks are easing because most central banks have seen inflation fall, and global inflation's fallen from over 10% towards 3% now. So that battle is behind us.
Jared Kerr there from the Kiwi Bank.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On the Money podcast.
The Australian share market rose today. The S&P ASX 200 up by just 0.13%. That is down from its high of the day earlier in the session. For the details, I spoke with Niv Dagan, the founder of Peak Asset Management.
Ricardo, commodities are off on the back of Chinese fading stimulus. Wesfarmers up strongly, APA, where Woodside and Santos down about 1.5%.
Can we talk about the international factors influencing the market at the moment? Because there's a lot of them. As you briefly mentioned, China. We've now got the conflict in the Middle East, the upcoming US election, interest rates. But what would you say is the key thing affecting markets right now?
Well, it's obviously geopolitical risk. I mean, we've seen a lot of tensions in the Middle East. Chinese stimulus, the big question is on everyone lips, is it the real deal? And then we're obviously impacting leading it up to the US election. So it's interest rates, US elections and geopolitical risk, to answer your question, Ricardo.
That China story, right? We've seen this big stimulus over the past couple of weeks, some more expected stimulus yesterday. Did the market think it was enough?
Look, the Chinese market's up or down about 10% in the last two trading sessions. So what it does show us that investors are very cautious about the Chinese stimulus and the fiscal stimulus following the Golden Week holiday.
The Reserve Bank of New Zealand cut official interest rates there by 50 basis points. It follows lower rates around the world except for Australia. What do you make of the global rate moves? Why is Australia lagging, and what does it mean for investments?
Yeah, really good question. I mean, we've seen obviously US investor policy starting to unleash. RBA is on focus. The Canadian market is already priced in a further interest rates cut. European central banks are the same. It really leaves only Australia. With the Reserve Bank in New Zealand cutting interest rates by 50 basis points, it does put significant pressure on the RBA to move ASAP.
And where do you see the opportunities for investors at the moment?
We think commodities are still undervalued, defensives, but we are starting to see a little bit more money, obviously, in some of the oil and energy stocks on the back of the geopolitical risks.
Niv Dagan there from Peak Asset Management.
This SBS On The Money stream is provided for informational purposes only. The content in this stream should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision. This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.